Now, where were we? We last saw Robert at King's Cross train station. No sooner had he sat in the coffee shopping portal than a man sat opposite him, dressed in a suit, neat as a pin, old-school class, with a hint of dandruff.
"Hello, Robert," said the man.
"Oh, good," thought Robert. "Someone else who knows my name. I wonder if you could help me. I have a troll problem."
Robert decided the best thing to do was to ignore this random stranger, who was obviously trying to involve him in something dangerous and unpleasant.
"Don't be coy," said the man. "We need your help.
You're one of the few people in the country who knows about trolls, and they're not being as responsive as they used to be."
"And that's not good for whoever you are?"
"I'm no one," said the man.
"I'm quite unofficial, though I represent some people who are quite official. An unofficial official, if you will."
And Robert thought he saw a twinkle in the man's eye.
"So," said Robert, "you want the trolls to do what exactly?"
"Bring us together. Harmonize our view of the world. There are too many ideas floating about, dangerous ideas, ideas without gatekeepers. We need the trolls to police these ideas, to reduce the number in circulation."
"I think you overestimate what they can do."
"Oh, I think not," the un-off-off stated emphatically. "They have a power to change how we see the world, and if they do their job well, then that change becomes almost permanent. Let me give you an example. Have you ever looked up to the moon and wondered what it looks like?"
"I know what it looks like. But are you sure?"
"Well, I can see it. It looks like, remarkably like the moon."
"Ah, but does it? Can you be sure?"
Reasonably.
"But when did the moon start looking like the moon? How long have we seen it as we see it?"
"A few thousand years."
"That's the best we can say. But what if I told you it's only a paper moon? That you have no idea what the moon looks like, and I know this because the dark side of the moon is blank."
"The dark side of the moon is blank. Yes.
Let me take you back to October 1959, and up in space a lonely lump of metal a little over a meter long and wide spiraled towards the moon, the first of its kind, in that it was to spin round the opposite side, the so-called dark side of the moon. It was a Soviet craft, imaginatively christened Luna, the third of that name. As it spun round to the other side, it snapped away at the unseen, and when it returned to the Earth side, it beamed the images back to us. And when I say us, I do mean us, for, embarrassingly for the Soviets, they were round the wrong side of the planet at the time, so couldn't get this world-shattering data. So they, very nicely, asked us to take the message. The data was received at Jodrell Bank, and the scientists, good honest men and true, didn't look at the pictures. But there was a problem. Jodrell didn't have a telex machine to send the information to the Soviets, so they tiptoed round to a national newspaper, which will remain nameless, and asked very nicely to use their equipment. Which the good people of the press agreed. What they didn't mention was that they would then nick the picture and splash it on their front page the next day. But scientists are so trusting, and journalists, well, they can be such shits, can't they? So ends the story of how almost the whole world saw the first bitty pictures of the dark side of the moon before the Soviets. Or it would be, if there wasn't a problem with the pictures. They were completely blank. Or not completely enough. The picture
department at the paper could see. They could see stars, the edge of the moon itself. They could see bits of the moon which were visible to the Earth. But the unknown part, the unknown surface, was completely white. Nothing. Nothingness. So the newspaper did what any responsible paper would do, and made it up. They got the picture department to fake the dark side of the moon. It wasn't hard. The images were bitty and grainy and very lo-fi. And so the paper got the scoop, the Soviets got their data, and the world was reassured that the moon looked fairly similar on the reverse as it did on the front. And that would be about it, if it wasn't for something very worrying. A little under 10 years later, Apollo 8 was due to travel round the dark side of the moon, around about Christmas time, and the reporters in on the faking were a little bit nervous. They would sooner or later be called out, but then, miraculously, Apollo 8 found that the images their picture department created of the completely unknown dark side of the moon were 100% correct. Even more worrying, there was one area of the original syndicated pictures which was created by an accidental printing error, and yet on the surface of the moon that printing error was duly filmed by the Apollo 8 crew. You see, once the world was primed with the idea of what the other side should look like, then it couldn't not see it. When Apollo 8 got there, the images could be refined, sharpened, because the new reality was now fixed. And then, 6 or so months later, Apollo 11 went and landed on the moon. Now, have you ever wondered why the live footage is so grainy, whilst the filmed material is as crisp as a pin? It wasn't because the moon landings were faked, oh no. It's because we hadn't learned what the unknown looked like. It's because as infants new to the world, we haven't yet learned how what we are seeing is supposed to look like yet. We haven't been taught how to see the universe through the eyes of everyone else. What's snow blindness but a reversion to the sight of reality, seeing the nothing of reality? When we realized this truth, we, my unofficial official predecessors, we realized how vital the trolls are to our survival, to the survival of, well, not just our petty interests, but the survival of ourselves. The trolls are mirrors into ourselves, but also prisms through which they can shape how we see the world. They are the people who hold the fibres of our reality together. If they don't weave those fibres as we wish it, then they could leave us worse than dead. Lost, lost in the streets of our homes, lost to the world, because we wouldn't be able to see the world anymore. Cultural devastation, a mental holocaust. The world overnight would starve to death because it couldn't see the food that was but a foot in front of them, and by God, we've given them enough reason to use this power.
The unofficial official sat for a moment and contemplated the table between them, waiting for Robert to speak.
So you're saying that nothing is real, that the moon is paper, and that everything we see is a lie?
Not quite. Reality isn't how we perceive it. Our sense of the world is as dependent on what we are taught about it as much as how we actually see it.
I see, said Robert, who didn't.
But in that case, how do you know that trolls exist?
But another voice interrupted the conversation, a man standing behind him.
Ah, but if we trolls didn't exist, you would need to invent us.
It was Gentleman Jim, and as he spoke he waved his hand and deposited a thin dust over Robert's eyes, who slumped forward onto the table and slept.
You think he believed all that? Asked Jim. Doesn't really matter. Enough of it is true, and it's enough that he thinks we think it's true, and if he thinks it's true, then possibly some of it is true. But almost nothing you ever say is true.
No, but he doesn't know that, so that makes it as true as anything else.
Are we both going in?
Yes, it's all arranged. We'll be both kidnapped in about 5 minutes.
Do you have any last-minute advice? Asked Jim.
Yes. Don't have the tea here. It's filthy.